This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky for May 2011. And of course, fewer dark hours now, so we must make the most of them. But after sunset, the constellation Gemini is setting towards the southwest, and Leo holds pride of place in the south with its bright star Regulus. Between Gemini and Leo is a fairly blank area of sky, but worth looking at particularly with binoculars, because you have the constellation of Cancer, the Crab, and within it, very close to its central brightish star, is the Beehive Cluster. Very nice to view with binoculars. Below Gemini, you also have the tiny constellation of Canis Minor, with just one bright star, Procyon. And then rising in the southeast is the constellation of Virgo, whose brightest star is Spica. Virgo is where, in fact, we can see the lovely planet Saturn, as we'll come across later. Though Virgo has got rather few bright stars, between Virgo and Leo lies a lovely region of the sky, which we call the realm of the galaxies. And with a small telescope under particularly dark skies, it's amazing how many galaxies can be seen. Many of the Messier objects lie in this region. It's looking towards what is called the Virgo supercluster, which has the Virgo cluster at its heart, and we are on the outskirts, our little local group of galaxies is on the outskirts of that wonderful supercluster. But also look high overhead towards the north, and you'll see Ursa Major. Very nice constellation, lots of interesting objects within it, but also, with binoculars, if you look at the central star of the three that make up the handle of the so-called plough, you'll see it's in fact a double star. And if you look with the telescope, you'll see that the brighter of those, in fact, is itself a double. So that's a rather nice thing to see with a small telescope. Well, what about the planets? Let's start with Jupiter. It passed behind the Sun on April the 6th, so is now visible in the pre-dawn sky when it rises shortly before the Sun. During the month, of course, it gradually rises earlier. And as we'll see in some of the highlights, we see a lovely parade of planets in the eastern horizon just before dawn. The magnitude stays pretty much the same throughout the month at minus 2.1. The angular size is about 33 arc seconds. So you could see quite a lot of detail, except for the fact it'll only be a few degrees above the horizon. And that means, of course, the atmosphere will degrade the image quite a bit. So it's probably not the best month to look at it in detail. What about Saturn? Well, that's a highlight of the month, really, as we'll come back to. It's an evening object. It actually reached opposition when it's basically due south at around midnight on April the 3rd and 4th. So during May, it's actually going to be well up into the southern sky and highest in elevation during the mid to late evening, ideal to make observations. As it's now going away from us a little bit, or rather we're going away from it perhaps, it starts the month with a magnitude of plus 0.5, and that decreases a little bit to about plus 0.7. Compared to a year ago, the brightness is actually greater because the rings are opening out. They're now about 8 degrees from edge on, so that means a little bit more area to reflect light towards us. They span an angular size of 43 arc seconds, about double the 19 arc seconds of the disk. I looked at it the other night with a 6-inch telescope. You can now fairly easily see Cassini's division. It's a dark band that separates the two outer of the rings, the A and the B ring. The B is sometimes called the bright ring because it's the brightest of the rings. You'll also see with a small telescope quite easily Saturn's brightest moon, Titan, at magnitude plus 8. And given good conditions, you might well pick up one or two of the other moons as well. Well, along with Jupiter and Mars, Mercury is visible low above the eastern horizon this month. It'll be so low, I'm pretty certain you'll need binoculars to spot it. About a month ago or so, I looked at Mercury low above the horizon, or tried to find it, and even when we knew exactly where to look, we weren't able to see it with binoculars. But in fact, someone had the bright idea of actually taking a photograph, which I did. So it came up on a photograph, but my goodness, it was hard to see. So it may not be easy to spot, but with binoculars just before dawn, there's a lovely array of planets. Mercury is one. Maybe you'll have a chance to see it. Well, Mars has also emerged into the pre-dawn sky. The trouble is that at this time of year, the ecliptic, which is the line along which you see the planets, because it represents the plane of our solar system, it's the path of the sun across the sky, is at a very shallow angle to the horizon. So even when the planets are some way away from the sun, their elevation is not in fact very great. So to see any of these planets, we're going to need a good low eastern horizon, and probably for the fainter ones, a pair of binoculars. Well, Mars' magnitude is increasing slightly. It'll be about plus 1.3 this month. The angular size is 4 arc seconds, so you're not going to see any details, particularly, of course, you've got such a low elevation. So finally we come to Venus. Well, that's been a pre-dawn object for some months now, been very visible in the morning sky. It's now getting a little bit closer to the sun. The magnitude at about minus 3.8 is the brightest object that we're going to see in that part of the sky. It's not high above the eastern horizon, as I've said. The angular size, as it gets further beyond the sun's distance from us, is reducing. It's from 11.6 arc seconds at the beginning of the month down to about 10.6 by the end. But of course, at the same time, as it gets further behind the sun, more of the disk is illuminated. That goes up from 88% to 93%. And in fact, the magnitude stays precisely the same. The two effects compensate each other. So finally, what about some highlights of the month? Well, I've mentioned Saturn already, lying in the constellation of Virgo, and closing in during the month to the star Porrima, which I'll return back to in a minute. That's called Gamma Virginis, is its other name. The rings appear brighter than they have done for a bit, but it won't be until 2016 that they're basically at their widest again. So each year up to then, we'll see Saturn a bit brighter in the sky, and the rings will be easier to observe. As I've said, you can certainly now see Cassini's division if the seeing, which relates to how turbulent the atmosphere is not too bad. As well as the largest moon Titan, a small telescope will easily show you certainly one of the bands in the northern hemisphere, in fact, a darker band that you see spanning around the disk. They're not nearly so prominent as on Jupiter, but in fact, it showed up pretty well the other night when I had a look. Now, I said it was getting close to Gamma Virginis, or Porrima. It gets very, very close by the end of the month. It's actually, Porrima is made up of two identical stars, each of magnitude 3.5. Way back around the turn of the century, they were separated by just 6 arc seconds, and you could easily split them with a small telescope. But of course, as they go around each other, the angular separation changes. And around 2005, they were so close they could barely be split. But this spring, the two stars should be separated by about 1.7 arc seconds, which means, again under reasonably good seeing, a small telescope should split it into two. So if you've looked at Saturn, just move a little bit to the right and have a look at Porrima, see if you can split it into two stars. But we do have a meteor shower this month, and the conditions are quite good. It's on May the 6th, which is just 3 days after New Moon, so there'll be no moon in the sky, which sometimes, of course, its light will totally block out faint meteors. The shower is called the Eta Aquarids, and that implies that the radiant, that's from where the meteors appear to diverge from, is in the constellation of Aquarius. Now that's actually pretty low down for us at our northern latitudes, so it doesn't rise very far above the sky, which means it will only see the meteors that are radiating sort of into half the sky, not the whole of it. Not to worry, if you look east-southeast before dawn, perhaps about 4 o'clock on May the 6th, you should be able to spot Aquarius. Have a look and see if you just see any bright streaks across the sky coming upwards from the east-southeastern horizon. They will be the Eta Aquarids. We should see, if it were dark and clear, about 25 meteors an hour at our northern latitudes, which isn't too bad. They rather interestingly result, these little dust particles that come into the atmosphere and burn up, result from the comet Halley. And the dust particles are released as Halley goes around the sun, as it lasted in about 1985-86, and that forms what's called a dust tail. Over time, the dust in the dust tail spreads out along the orbit. So each time the Earth crosses the orbit of a periodic comet like that, those little dust particles come into the atmosphere and burn up, and we see what I rather like to call shooting stars. So, at the very end of the month, May 29th to 31st. As I've said, these four planets, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus and Mars, are all visible in the pre-dawn sky. And if you go on the night sky, two words into Google, you'll find little pictures showing you where they are. Again, we have a thin crescent moon each night nearer the horizon. And below that, we will see the planets. Jupiter is now highest in the sky and towards the south. Lying in line down towards the horizon, first Mars, then Venus, and finally, just above the horizon, Mercury. So, a chance to see four planets all together in the morning sky, along with a thin crescent moon. There must be a rather nice photograph there somewhere, as long as there's not too much haze in the sky to mean the brightness of the fainter of these planets isn't so good. Well, as I said, rather fewer hours to observe this month, but maybe one or two nice things to look at, so happy hunting.
Kia ora and welcome to the May Jodcast from the Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. May and June are great months for observing the most distant objects in our night sky, galaxies. The northern and southern sky is sparse with bright stars as we look away from the Milky Way, which runs east-west during our evening sky. For many years, the Milky Way was believed to be the entire universe and nothing existed outside of it. Early astronomers tried to plot the shape and size of the universe by measuring the number of stars and estimating their distance by their brightness. William Herschel was one such astronomer. He, along with others, noticed fuzzy shapes that they called nebulae. They thought they were either star clusters that their telescopes could not resolve, or were, in the case of spiral structures, forming solar systems. As telescopes became more and more powerful and of better quality, many clusters along the Milky Way were in fact found to be star clusters, or clusters embedded in luminous clouds of material. Many of the nebulae away from the plane of the Milky Way could still not be resolved as individual stars. It wasn't until the 1930s that the distance to these nebulae could be estimated. Using the light curve of Cepheid variable stars observed in the Great Nebula in Andromeda, as it was then known, this nebula turned out to be a galaxy with millions of stars and millions of light years away. A large number of amateur astronomers are involved in long-term observation programs of variable stars and supernovae hunts. These help further refine the distances to galaxies. In our southern sky, the two closest galaxies visible to us are the small and the large Magellanic Clouds. As both sit near the south celestial pole, they are circumpolar throughout Aotearoa, New Zealand. Both can be seen on a clear, moonless night and may even be seen in suburban skies. Galaxies come in a variety of classifications: spiral, elliptical, irregular, and a number of subgroups in each classification. An interesting elliptical galaxy that can be seen in small telescopes is Centaurus A, or NGC 5128. This galaxy, the fifth brightest in our night sky, can be found 4 degrees north of the naked eye globular cluster Omega Centauri. In small telescopes, it appears as a faint oval with a dark band running lengthwise along the oval shape. This dark band has given rise to its nickname as the Hamburger Galaxy. Astronomers are unsure as to what is actually happening in this galaxy. Current theory is that it's in the process of absorbing a smaller spiral galaxy. This galaxy is about 15 million light years away. An eagle-eyed observer, Stephen James Amira, has managed to see this galaxy with his unaided eye. Why don't you give it a go? Another southern galaxy is NGC 253, known as the Sculptor or Silver Dollar Galaxy, which shines at 8th magnitude and is 11 million light years away. Visible in binoculars from a dark sky location, small telescopes will reveal it as an oval bulge with a bright nucleus. Larger telescopes may reveal dark bands in its disk. Nearby and visible in a 100mm telescope is the globular cluster NGC 288. Moving toward the northern sky is a lovely galaxy called M104, known as the Sombrero Galaxy, and it is in the constellation of Virgo. Visible in 7x50 binoculars as a bright patch, a 100mm or greater telescope will reveal more of the galaxy's shape. A 300mm telescope will reveal the dark rain that makes the galaxy resemble the shape of a sombrero. Virgo is home to a large number of galaxies within range of medium-sized telescopes. These galaxies are part of the Greater Virgo Cluster that contains over 1,300 individual galaxies. The largest in the cluster is called M87 and shines at magnitude 10. The total estimated mass of this galaxy may be up to 200 times that of our own. Long exposure images of M87 reveal a jet of material escaping from the core. This jet is believed to be the material that is made of the matter being ejected by a supermassive black hole at the center. Virgo is one of the zodiac constellations, and the Sun moves in front of the constellation during mid-September to late October. It is the second largest constellation in the night sky after Hydra, the snake. In Greek mythology, Virgo is associated with the goddess of wheat. The brightest star in Virgo is Spica, the 15th brightest in our night sky. It is a blue giant star 260 light years away from us, and this star is variable and has a close companion. There are a number of bright stars in Virgo that collectively form a large rectangular shape. To date, 26 planets have been found orbiting 20 individual stars in Virgo, the most in any constellation. 61 Virginis has a system of 3 planets in the range from 5 to 25 times the mass of our own planet Earth. It is in Virgo that we find the only planet visible in our evening sky, Saturn. Well placed for early observing, Saturn and its rings always make for spectacular viewing. With the rings still thin, it is a good opportunity to spot some of the smaller and fainter moons. The other bright planets are still too close to the Sun to be easily seen. Rising later in the evening is the constellation of Capricorn, which is playing host to the brightest asteroid, Vesta. Discovered in 1807 by Heinrich Olbers, who had previously discovered an asteroid in 1802, named Pallas. For a number of years, the asteroids Ceres, Vesta, Pallas, and Juno were all known as planets with their own planetary symbol. But following the discovery of a large number of fainter asteroids, they were collectively relegated to becoming asteroids as well. Recently, with the creation of a category of dwarf planets, the largest asteroid Ceres has been bumped up the order to become a dwarf planet. Vesta is still rated as an asteroid and has a diameter of 530 kilometers and contains an estimated 9% of the total mass of the asteroid belt. In July of this year, the Dawn spacecraft will go into orbit around this interesting object and will study it for about a year before moving on to Ceres. Over 200 meteorites discovered on Earth have a composition that points to them coming from Vesta. Earth-based observations have found a large crater in the southern hemisphere of this asteroid, and this crater may be the source of these meteorites. Crux, the Southern Cross, is high overhead in our evening sky with the pointers nearby. The region around Carina, the Keel and Vela the Sails are home to a number of bright stars, clusters and nebulae that can be viewed with unaided eye, binoculars or telescope. Scorpius and Sagittarius rise in the east after sunset. By late evening they are well above the horizon and host to a number of beautiful and interesting objects which we will look at in next month's Jodcast. In the morning sky, Venus is still the brilliant morning star, and there will be a number of conjunctions with other planets during May. Mars, Mercury and Jupiter are all in the early morning sky. May 2nd sees Jupiter and Mars close together. May the 12th sees Jupiter and Venus and Mercury in conjunction. May 22nd will see Mercury, Venus, Mars and Jupiter together, now higher in the morning sky. Many thanks for listening to our Jodcast, and we hope that you have clear skies and great observing.